This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
It is, and Dan Crane is joining us to discuss more about Alec Murdo. I've asked a lot of defense attorneys and people in the legal world many questions now about their thoughts on the testimony of Alec Murdo last week on the stand. But Dan, I want to hear yours as a forensic scientist. How do you think he did?
I did find his testimony, the pieces of it that I saw, to be really quite fascinating, quite intriguing. You know, the local color was really quite interesting. I would think that would be true for just about anyone. But I also saw somebody who was testifying on the witness stand who was really quite good at being a witness. You know, I've testified now over 120 some times in 27 different states and, you know, England and other places, never as a defendant, thankfully, but nonetheless, I have some experience with getting on the witness stand, and what is it? You know, a polished expert recognizes a polished expert, right?
Sure.
He was very good at communicating and conveying in ways that I would expect the jurors in his trial would understand, right? So he was being very effective. He wasn't volunteering information that was going to end up causing problems for him, opening up doors for more questions and so forth. And I could see the wheels turning. I thought I could see wheels turning in his head. He listened carefully to the questions. He thought about what his answer would be, and he delivered a very concise, very direct answer that didn't look like it was obviously something he had thought about very carefully. And yet I could see that he was thinking very carefully and choosing his words very carefully. So it was really, I thought he did a very good job testifying on his own behalf.
How do you think, what's your opinion on the cross with the Creighton Waters on that portion of the testimony?
You know, in the past when we've talked, I've suggested that attorneys are conducting an orchestra. Let me use it, and the experts and the people who are testifying are there to deliver one or two specific notes that weave together to this beautiful story. I'll use a little bit of a different analogy now. I think there are some really interesting parallels between baseball and testifying.
Okay.
And from my perspective, I sort of see the person testifying as the batter and the person asking the questions as the attorneys for direct examination. So when you're talking to the attorneys that you've been working with, it's more or less like you're doing a home run derby, mm-hmm. right?
Sure.
You know the questions that are coming. You've practiced the questions and the answers going back and forth a few times. And you can tell the attorney, look, I want you to phrase the question this way. Like a batter might say, hey, I want the ball at this height above the plate coming in at this particular speed. Uh-huh. And you can not take a swing at a ball that you don't like as it's coming across the plate. For cross-examination, that's like a real game. And good pitching can always beat good hitting. It's just that if a pitcher makes a mistake, a good hitter will capitalize on it. And the best hitters, I'm thinking Pete Rose kind of hitters, say that they were able to count the stitches on the ball as it was coming toward them when it got released from the pitcher's hand. And physicists say that that is probably not possible, but I believe it. And regardless, for the cross-examination that we saw in the Murdoch trial, I think I was seeing a really good hitter that was in seeing the questions and anticipating what the payoff line of the questions was going to be 3 or 4 steps before the prosecutor got to those questions. And with the answers that Murdoch was giving to those preliminary questions, he knew where the prosecutor wanted to go, and his answers nudged the trajectory of the questions a little bit so that when the payoff questions came, Murdoch was able to hit it out of the park. I think he was able to, he saw where the questions were going to go, and he took advantage of that insight. And I think there were a number of instances where he made the prosecutor regret having gone down those lines of questions.
What were some of the areas that you think that he made Creighton regret going down?
You know, the one that comes first to mind is there are actually a couple of instances where the prosecutor was trying to say, well, this is what you've said, or this is it, you've changed what you said. You said this, at some point in the past during your first interview, for instance,
sure.
And now suddenly it's a different story. And Murdoch was able to see those questions coming. He clearly had a good recollection, you know, because he must have looked at those same recordings and transcripts fairly recently. And he was able to say, no, I didn't say those things. And he was able to lead the prosecutor along and to do things like say, well, you know, let's listen to that. Let's, you know, show me what you're thinking about. And that's a pretty gutsy move for a defendant to do. Very self-confident, very knowledgeable about what's going on, and leading the prosecutor along a path that the prosecutor ultimately wasn't in control. It was Murdoch that was saying, no, let's listen to that and let me tell you what I said. And then, you know, surprisingly, being given the opportunity to emphasize that, to underscore it a couple times when the prosecutor said, but what you really said was this. I'm like, no, we just listened to it. And this is what I said. And this is what I'm saying today. It's all the same.
I mean, you're exactly right. In both sides, with Murdoch, it felt like a narcissist gaslighting somebody. With Creighton, it just seemed like an angry, petulant child getting frustrated with someone at some points with the way he was reacting. And that never comes across good to a jury as kind of snarky or kind of slick or kind of, you know, just the demeanor, I don't think, played very well. Do you think Alec did himself favors or hurt himself by going on the stand with everything that he testified to?
I'll answer your question first, and then I'll comment about something you just said about demeanor.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It just seems to me that it was a big plus for Murdoch to testify on his own behalf again, because it just seems to me that he really did a very good job of being a witness. He seemed very, you know, he had his story straight.
Yeah.
And he had his story straight in a way that was consistent with things that he had said previously. And he was very liberal in saying, look, I've done some bad things. It was a confessional kind of thing. Uh-huh. I've done bad things. I didn't do this bad thing. And he seemed to come across as being very believable. But a moment ago, you mentioned demeanor, and that sort of trips a wire in my thinking. And because I'll tell you, I think one of the most important things to do when you're testifying, either as an expert witness or as an eyewitness, whenever you're testifying, I feel it's really critical to have the same demeanor, both for direct and for cross-examination. Jurors can tell very quickly if your cadence is different, if you are looking at a different place in the courtroom between direct and cross-examination. And I think that telegraphs, hey, look, what we heard for direct examination was fake or contrived or something that I shouldn't quite give as much credence to. I think Murdoch did a really good job of being consistent, both in direct and cross-examination, and that bolsters the credibility that he established during his direct examination.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
Dan Crane, forensic scientist, thank you for coming on and sharing your insight with us. Always very much appreciated. Need you to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. You don't miss any of our breaking updates and discussions on the cases that we're following for you. You can check out the full list of cases we are following in the episode description on this very episode. So do check that out. My name is Tony Bruschi. You can follow me on Twitter @TonyBPod. Stay with us.